By this, I mean that, for example, a son, or several sons, if there are several of these, would take on the same occupation of his father, or, if one or another exists, would take over his company or business and continue it on. How is this with you? Do the same views exist with you? Quetzal, 121. No, that is not the case. 122. All descendants are entirely free in their choice of activity, so there is never a desire that children must perform the same activity, etc. as their parents, neither in relation to the father nor mother and, thus, neither a son nor a daughter. 123. So for example, parents can be an Ischweiss and or Ischreis, while a son of theirs learns a simple craft, as this can also be the case for a daughter. 124. Parents always only play an advisory role with their descendants, but it is never insisted by them that the descendants would have to turn to a specific activity, etc. 125. And before you ask, 126. This also has reference to the choice of a partner as well as to the education of the descendants and, of course, also to the home of choice, etc. Billy, I think that's good. It also corresponds to my sense. Then another question, do you actually know a lot about the sailor's yarn? Quetzal, 127. You see me without understanding. 128. What does sailor's yarn mean? 129. The term is unknown to me. Billy, oh, excuse me. Unbelievable and fantastic stories that are told by sailors are called sailor's yarn. Quetzal, 130. Do you mean stories about call fate turns? Billy, no, it has nothing to do with that. By the way, how did you come across that word? Quetzal, 131. It belongs to our German usage. Billy, you can forget that word, in order to try to make yourself understandable, for this term has no longer been in use for a long time. It traces back to an old German language and means a haunt in a good or bad sense. However, this call Phaeton, that is a haunt, is a matter of the ship's kobold, which continues to be known as a ship's spirit, which means that the ship's kobolds are only of importance among the sailors but not among the landlubbers. The ship's kobold, that is the ship's spirit, so says the popular belief, but especially the sailor's belief, knocks against the ship's planks to warn the sailors that repairs to the ship's walls must be made. But on the other hand, the ship's kobold should also announce disaster, such as a severe storm, a plague on board, or even the sinking of the ship. So it can appear in difficult situations as a good spirit or as a goblin that brings misfortune and death to the ship and its crew. This is the sailor's belief and the popular belief. Quetzal, 132. Then the word klabüsern would probably be right, or is it klabüstern? Billy, no, because that means something else again. The term klabüstern would be right. The word addressed by you is called klabüstern and is a variant of klabastern. On the one hand, in the language of soldiers, it means that other people, that is recruits, are ruthlessly drilled and compressed together and then made into useful, obedient, and disciplined soldiers. On the other hand, klabüstern also refers to the so-called klabüster beer. This is a product of impurity, namely with humans and animals. These are small, dried-up excrement residues, small balls of excrement that stick in the hairs around the anus. Wait a minute, it is probably here in the dictionary, one moment. Yes, here, it says the same thing as what I told you. Still in reference to klabüster beer and the language of soldiers, it is said in jargon that someone let the klabüster beer and fly from his ass. Quetzal, 133. A harsh language. Billy, that is just so among the earthlings. But back to the sailor's yarn, since ancient times, sailors have told tales about sea monsters that they would have seen, and such monsters should have always had such enormous proportions that they should have pulled even large ocean-going vessels into the deep. In particular, these old stories exist about giant squid with enormously long tentacles. Have you ever tried to investigate these stories, and what should actually be thought of these, as well as of these sea monsters? Are these actually real, or is it all, in the end, just a great sale of fabulation? Quetzal, 134. These sailors' stories throughout the centuries are familiar to us, and we have, in fact, endeavored to clarify them. 135. And even though many fabulations, as you say, can be found in these sailors' stories, there existed, and there actually exists, the described sea monsters, if one wants to call them such. 136. At the same time, there are different genera, as well as specific species that developed from these, but so far, these have not yet been discovered or rather have not been found, by the earthly researchers and scientists. 137. And since you speak of squid in particular, I can tell you this, that there are actually such gigantic creatures in the oceans. It's just that they live at very great depths and only rarely come to the surface of the ocean. 138. The largest of these giant squids, which we found at great ocean depths, so at a depth of more than 2,000 meters, exhibited a height of 25 meters, from which emerged 10 tentacles, which were 99.6 meters in length. 139. But we only found this size among the cephalopods, while other gigantic animals only exhibited sizes of up to 52 meters, such as calamari. Translator's note. For one to get a rough idea as to how large the squid was that the Plejurans discovered at the depths of one of Earth's oceans, a picture appears below, which corresponds to a 125-meter-long squid lying next to a standard football field. Billy, cephalopod, so squids, which are also known to us as cuttlefishes. Quetzal, 140. That is correct. 141. But now, you should slowly come to an end with your questions. Billy, I will. But if you still have some time, then I would still have two or three questions to ask. Quetzal, 142? Certainly. Billy, good, thank you. How were Minoa and the Minoan culture destroyed? Do you know much about this? Quetzal, 143. The history of the earth and the history of nations fall into my area. 144. Thus, I can give you information. 145. Two factors were to blame for the fall of the Minoan culture, namely on the one hand, the disorder of the Minoan society, which was very divided in some respects and which created evil hatred in the various social structures, even due to the disagreement that the Minoan Empire threatened to fall apart. 146. The cultural structures split apart, and soon, the whole thing threatened to degenerate into a war of the entire citizenry and, thus, of all levels of society. 147. But before this could happen, a tremendous natural disaster occurred, namely as the Santorini volcano erupted and burst forth lava, gas, steam, and ash, whereby the ashes alone exhibited the large amount of 73.6 cubic kilometers. 148. Also vast sulfur fumes belonged to this, whereby the whole atmosphere was so polluted and shrouded in a veil that the sun was darkened, and climate changes emerged from this, which lasted for several years. 149. Low temperatures arose from the veil of smoke and dust in the atmosphere, which caused many years of harvest failures. 150. The bad and poor harvests led to the Great Famine during the following period. 151. In addition, the Santorini volcano did the rest, for as a result of its powerful eruption and the subsequent explosion, which triggered gigantic tsunamis that devastated the large areas of the Minoan island when the waters raged across the island, many buildings and lands were destroyed, while very many people lost their lives. 152. The largest tsunami, however, the huge tidal wave caused by the explosion of the volcano, rolled far across the sea to Egypt, being red with the blood of countless slaughtered aquatic animals, by what means the River Nile then colored itself red, and many people in Egypt died. 153. But the tsunami found no end in Egypt and rolled back into the sea, where it united with another tsunami, which was generated by the explosion of the Santorini volcano, and rolled eastward, where the country was destroyed once again and people were killed, when the wild waters penetrated into the country. Billy, as a doctor, what do you know about breast cancer? What causes this? Quetzal, 154. As a rule, this suffering is of a gene contingent nature. Billy, and what gene is responsible for it? Quetzal, 155. I may not explain that officially but may only tell you in confidence. 156. What gene it concerns, the terrestrial scientists and researchers have to find out themselves, for our directives prohibit direct explanatory interference in foreign cultures and civilizations, in terms of progress, etc. Billy, good, accepted. So no other question about it. As it now stands with the climate of the Earth, however, it is always said that this is warming up. Does it actually become warmer? Quetzal, 157. The year 2001 will be the warmest one out of the previous 200 years until then, and global warming will still continue even after that. 158. On the one hand, this warming has already been happening for decades through entirely natural processes and phenomena of the Earth and the Sun, as I already explained once before, and on the other hand, it also occurs through the unreasonable interference of the Earth people on the climate, through air pollution and consequent production of a greenhouse effect. Billy, Sam Jace once told me something in connection with the movement of matter and light. Quetzal, 159. I can remember that because I was there when she told you that light can move any matter, and it actually does this. Billy, thank you. Yes, that's it, exactly. As you know, I've gathered and calculated a lot with regard to the Christian calendar. You've also told me that I had calculated very precisely and that only small errors were contained in my calculations. With respect to these calculations, I have endeavored again and recently discovered that the actual birth of Jmanuel must have taken place not 4, 6, or even 7 years before the Christian calendar but rather 5 years. This means that Jmanuel effectively must have seen the light of this world 5 years before the Christian calendar. Through a look into the past, I also discovered that at the time of his birth, not only was a beaming spaceship visible in the sky, but also actually a very large comet, which could be seen all over the world, namely for about several weeks. Quetzal, 160. Your explanations are correct. 161. And since you alone have now found the true facts, nothing more stands in the way for me to tell you further details. 162. The exact year of Jmanuel's birth was 5 years before the Christian calendar known today. 163. At that time, there actually was a very large and unusually strongly radiating comet that was observable from the Earth, which we call the Fruitful One, because from very early times, inseminations for the Earth and for the planet Phaeton, that is Melona, have gone out from it, by what means life could develop on these two solar satellites. 164. The Fruitful One, however, has an extremely long period of revolution on a path that leads far out into the Oort cloud. 165. Accordingly, it will take more than 11,000 years, according to Earth's measure of time, before a return of this comet occurs in the Sol system. 166. Its orbital period is 13,200 years. 167. Together with this event of the appearance of the Fruitful One, the birth of Jmanuel also took place on the 3rd of February, 5 years before the Christian calendar, whereby the 3rd of February of today's calendar is converted for the time and the day of that time. 168. At that same time, When Jmanuel was born, in order to monitor and supervise everything, a large Plegeran beam ship was stationed high in the atmosphere over Bethlehem. 169. This radiated very brightly, for it was one of those aircraft that collect energy from the atmosphere, which light up, radiating very strongly, when they penetrate into the area of the processing system, through which anti-gravity is produced. Billy, aha. Then I still have one last question. Here in Switzerland, as well as in other countries, people who kill another human being under the influence of alcohol, or who knock another down and kill him with a vehicle, like in the case of my brother Carl, who died at the beginning of the year in this manner, are only very mildly punished. When a person is knocked down and killed, if the driver of the vehicle is drunk, usually only very small fines are imposed on the respective death driver, as this happened when my brother was knocked down and killed. The driver of the vehicle only received a fine of 300 francs, that was all. In the maximum case, if it ever has to come to this, a very short term of imprisonment might be imposed on such a death driver, which is so ridiculously short that it practically can't be seen as a punishment but as just a state holiday. What do you think of this, and how would your legislation judge these things? Quetzal, 170. Our laws clearly stipulate that if such an act was committed in a drunken state, then it would equal a serious felony, which would also accordingly have to be punished very harshly. 171. Such an act is, in fact, a clearly deliberate act of murder, for if a person gets drunk on alcohol, he very well knows and is aware of the fact that in his drunken state, he loses control over himself, over his mental competence, and over his reactivity, etc. 172. But in the case of drunkenness, the cognition of this knowledge and this responsibility to be born is deliberately disowned, whereby disasters, accidents, misfortunes, and crimes are casually accepted. Therefore, a person in a drunken state is undoubtedly fully responsible for his actions and deeds, and so, he should also accordingly be punished, harshly and impartially, like with any other delinquent and non-drunken and, thus, sober and fully conscious person, just as every crime is included in this. 173. So drunkenness is never a reason for a reduced sentence, but on the contrary, it is a reason for severe punishment, when a criminal offense or even a felony, such as murder, is committed. 174. A reduced sentence can only ever be given when there are actually mitigating factors present, like with true mental incompetence. 175. However, such is not given in the drunken state, namely for the explained reason that there is a prior, conscious knowledge of the potential disaster, misfortune, accident, and crime. Billy, so in the drunken state, each form of killing, such as a crime resulting in death, etc., is effective murder. Quetzal, 176. That is correct. 177. So it is also held in our laws. Billy, aha, and I thought that you only had weak alcoholic drinks and no more people who get drunk. Quetzal, 178. You misunderstood something. 179. We have very weak alcoholic drinks, but the alcohol content is so low that it can only be measured as a small fraction of a percent of alcohol content. 180. Therefore, it isn't possible that a person could get drunk on alcohol, not even if he could drink several liters of such a drink. 181. Nevertheless, we still have an old conventional legislation that governs alcoholism, as well as intoxication by alcohol and acts of every kind that are committed in this state, so when one is killed or a crime is otherwise committed or when any harm, accident, or misfortune is caused. 182. But this legislation is already more than 5,600 years old and has never had to be put to use since that time when our alcoholic drinks were reduced in their percentages in such a way as I explained to you. 183. Moreover, the people of our world have learned and have adjusted themselves to get by without alcoholic drinks, for these are not necessary for a normal and healthy lifestyle. 184. Of course, wine, for example, can have a health-promoting effect, if this is enjoyed with measure and a goal, as this is also the case with other substances, but on our part, we have so aligned our food toward the highest possible health values that we have no longer needed alcoholic drinks for more than 5,600 years, which also eliminated the dangers of evil caused by drunkenness. Bli, oh, I see. I've actually misunderstood something there. But could I expect that you, and maybe even Tua, would drink a glass of wine with me, if I were to find you one? Quetzal, 185. Nothing should prevent that, if it is a rare or unique case. Billy, of course, for I wouldn't want to make you alcoholics, which I myself also wouldn't want to be. Only, until it has come so far that I can enjoy some alcoholic drinks again, due to my collapse on the 4th of November, 1982, some time will still pass, because for the time being, it's just impossible for me. Later, it will probably only remain a rarity, if it should once again come so far that every now and then, I might actually be able to drink a glass of wine or a small glass of liqueur, if I can bear with my medication, but I must still leave this question open and cannot answer it yet. The future will show me what will be. Quetzal, 186. If it should be that you can take in some alcohol again, then I will confer with Tua regarding your proposal. Billy, of course. Ah, I suppose that you have the freedom to decide for yourselves as to whether or not you want to drink alcohol, or is there an ordinance that forbids this, thus, a ban? Quetzal, 187. No, that is not the case because the abstention from alcohol is founded on a voluntary basis, so we can very well drink alcohol if we want. Billy, and concerning this, how is it with your federation members? Quetzal, 188. Some are inclined towards moderation in strong alcoholic drinks, but others act as we do. 189. But even those who consume alcohol in moderation do not get drunk. Billy, it is very pleasing to hear that in the vastness of space, there are people who, in this respect, and certainly in many other concerns, are much more rational and more responsible in their thoughts and actions than most of the Earth people. Quetzal, 190. That is a word of truth. 191. But now, my friend, it's time for me to tell you goodbye, for my duties call me. 192. But I don't want to neglect to express to you my special thanks for your teachings with regard to the sailor's yarn and the ship's kobold and the other terms. 193. Farewell now, and by the way, I'm glad to see that you're making health progress, even if it still isn't the best with your well-being. 194. But even that will yet arise, as I've told you. 195. Now farewell, my friend, and once again, my best thanks. Billy, bye, Quetzal. It is my pleasure to have you as a friend. Until we meet again. 214th Contact Tuesday, February 3, 1987, 2:39 p.m. Billy, be also greeted, my friend. And be welcome. May I ask you, at the outset of our conversation, to answer some questions? Quetzal, 1. Certainly. 2. But later, I would like to discuss with you some concerns that are of a purely private nature. Billy, of course. Well then, since you concern yourself, among many other things, also with biblical history, or more precisely Hebrew history, and since you call rather large areas of knowledge your own in this respect, you can surely tell me what's up with the Exodus from Egypt, in reference to the duration of the crossing of the desert. In the Bible, it is claimed that the Great Exodus wandering lasted for 40 years, until the entrance into the so-called Promised Land took place. Quetzal, 3. This assertion of the Bible does not correspond to the truth because the time of the entire Exodus up to the invasion and occupation of the Promised Land only lasted for 40 weeks. Billy, So 40 is true, but these weren't years but rather only weeks. At the same time, when I consider the distance from Egypt to Palestine, then the reality hits even sooner, because where would the Hebrews have wandered around in the desert for 40 years and on what would they have lived and satisfied their thirst? Moreover, the Mediterranean Sea was always on the left side from Egypt to Palestine, by which the refugees could orient themselves and along which they also moved, alternating in the nearer distance and then again in the further distance. Now, also regarding the death of Moses, statements are made that are not correct, as Sam Jace once explained to me. What is the truth concerning this? Quetzal, 4. Moses was murdered by Joshua and his accomplices. 5. The reason for this was rather manifold. 6. On the one hand, Joshua wanted to gain control over the Hebrews, which is why he later claimed that in this respect, Moses had determined this through God's command, for it was even God's will. 7. And on the other hand, Moses became hated by many, as well as by the murderous accomplices, not in the least because of the fratricides of the unbelievers of God and of Moses, which were mercilessly committed against all those who were not of Moses' view and who did not believe his words and who contributed to strife through this. Billy, so that was it. Well then, on my great journey, it was shown to me by Tur, at a little more than 50 million light years away from the Sol system, a galaxy, in whose center an enormously gigantic explosion allowed everything to shake. I have told an engineer, about this, but I no longer remember the name of the galaxy. Quetzal, 8. Sam Jace told me about that. 9. The name of the galaxy. 10. We call it Global Lung. 11. Also on Earth, it will become well known among the people, but only around the turn of the millennium. However, it will already be well known to astronomers prior to this. 12. Their designation for it will be NGC 4636. Translator's note, the following article was taken from http://chandra.harvard.edu/photo/2001/0144/NGC4636, Hot Galactic Arms Point to Vicious Cycle, credit, NASA/SAU/CXC/C.Jones et al. Chandra's image of the elliptical NGC 4636 shows spectacular symmetric arms, or arcs, of hot gas extending 25,000 light-years into a huge cloud of multi-million degree Celsius gas that envelopes the galaxy. At a temperature of 10 million degrees, the arms are 30% hotter than the surrounding gas cloud. The temperature jump, together with the symmetry and scale of the arms, indicate that the arms are the leading edge of a galaxy-sized shockwave that is racing outward from the center of the galaxy at 700 km per second. An explosion with an energy equivalent to several hundred thousand supernovas would be required to produce this effect. This eruption could be the latest episode in a feedback cycle of violence that keeps the galaxy in a state of turmoil. The cycle starts when a hot gas cloud that envelops the stars in the galaxy cools and falls inward toward a central, massive black hole. The feeding of the black hole by the infalling gas leads to an explosion that heats the hot gaseous envelope, which then cools over a period of several million years to begin the cycle anew. Fast facts for NGC 4636. Credit NASA/SAU/CXC/C.Jones et al. Scale images 5x4 Arcmin across. Category Normal Galaxies and Starburst Galaxies. Coordinates, J2000, Ra 12 hours 42 minutes 50 seconds, December plus 02 degrees 41 17 inches. Constellation Virgo. Observation dates January 26-27, 2000. Observation time 15 hours ops. IDs 323. Color code intensity instrument ASIS. Distance estimate 50 million light years. Release date December 19, 2001. Billy, aha. To view this galaxy was, for me, something especially remarkable. Yet since we're already at it, if I remember correctly, Tua also explained to me that comet tails carry toxic substances with themselves, which are also essential ingredients for the formation of dwarf suns, from which larger stars can then develop. Quetzal, 13. That is correct. 14. The main toxic substance of this kind is hydrocyanic acid. Billy, hydrocyanic acid.